Welcome to Toffee Blue View, your source for all things Everton. Jerry here. Also here is Max, and a face from the past, a voice from the past, an entity that we are all so very used to, and we've been pining for months. It's David. David's back, everybody. So I'll give you just a minute to soak in his essence. Give him a clap for him at your computer or wherever you are. David, welcome back, man. It's good to see you and hear you.
Thank you very much, Jerry, and of course, Max. I feel like I'm home, back where it all began.
Yeah, well, you're always welcome, you know, even if you literally just want to listen in and not even say anything. We're good with that.
I'm always listening in. and time permitting, I like to come on. It's a busy schedule, but I thoroughly enjoy sitting down with you gents from different parts of the world.
So David, what have you been up to, man? I know you've got work that's gotten kind of hectic. I see you posting on Twitter all the time how you're covering like 5 games in 5 days.
Yeah, it's just busy. Covering a lot of football. I'm kind of here, there, and everywhere. But right now, I've got a nice, chill evening. Get to talk to you lads again, which is always good. Just keeping busy. And looking forward to our chat about the Blues. Especially, I'm glad I've come on after we've had a win, because I remember certainly a lot of last season. There wasn't much of that going on. So happy days.
How in the hell did we make this thing stay afloat during last season?
I'm
understand.
Not sure we did. I think we. sorry. Sorry, mate. Come on, Dex. We had a go, didn't we? We did okay, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Shh, come on.
It was for those of you listening. David's little pup is joining him on his couch. So. Yeah. That's why he's saying shh. He's not telling me and Max to shush just yet.
Yeah, he's the real star of the show, aren't you, mate?
Oh. Yeah. I wish we would have had him last season.
Yes. We needed something cuddly to kind of balance out our vitriol for Big Sam, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bring down the room, guys. I just mentioned Big Sam, and we've been trying not to. You know, so
yeah, even,
my bad.
Even Dexter nearly left when you mentioned Big Sam's name then. Go on, mate. What's he
got?
Right. Anyway.
So basically, just so you know, we do, for those of you listening, we do have a mascot here. So that's a thing, and it's wonderful.
He's just going to come out of shot every so often, so just bear with it. Or enjoy it. If you like dogs, he's something else for you to watch except those three.
You like Dags? I like Dags. What was that? What was that from? Was that Snatch?
Snatch. Yeah. Yes. What a film.
Yeah. So, if you're listening right now, you may hear some weird stuff. I'm not in a soundproof booth. I never have been. So if you've been under that impression, apologies for shattering your illusions. But I'm in an office. And I'm right beside a window, and there's wind and rain whipping against the window. So if you hear that, it's only because we have a tropical storm and tornado watch and that kind of stuff. Not a big deal. I think we're okay. But if you hear stuff, that's what's going on. It came up through Florida. Something Category 4 hurricane hit Florida yesterday or this morning or something. And it's been kind of shooting up through the southeast. Positive vibes for the Florida folk. And I think in North Carolina we're gonna be okay. Just some flooding, hopefully not too bad. So,
fingers crossed.
Yeah. Just having a little rough stretch in the southeast U.S. with weather right now. So, anyway, now that I brought the room down even more, let's go ahead and do the summary of what's going on this show for the podcasters out there. We're gonna start. We're talking about a guy we actually haven't talked about enough, which is funny because he's been on fire. We need to talk a little bit more about the Iceman, Gylfi Sigurdsson. He looks really good right now. We're going to talk about why, what works best for him in terms of style and people surrounding him and that kind of stuff. So we'll get to that first. Then we're going to talk about a player who used to be the bane of David's existence. So it's kind of cool that we've chosen to talk about him when David is joining us. So we're going to talk about Michael Keane. All right. Yeah, and then we'll work to some retro rumors. We wanted kind of a lighter segment because international break is upon us, and it sucks, as always. It's terrible. Yeah, I wouldn't wish this on anyone.
How many? That's my question. How many people? Because the World Cup, then we're up with one straight away, and now another one. Too much, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's too much.
No one likes these international breaks unless you've got tickets to watch one of the friendlies or one of those other... Actually, some of these are not even friendlies now. They're like, was it UEFA League or whatever that...
Do you know what? The name just slipped my mind. We were talking about that today.
Yeah?
What's it called? So, like the Nations League, something like that.
Yeah, but that's what it is.
Yeah, it's just glorified friendlies, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's sort of making the friendlies matter a little bit more, I guess. Which, I get that a little bit. However, when you make the friendlies matter more just after a World Cup, when they actually have some import, people get hurt.
Mm.
And that sucks always. So, anyway, we'll be digging into some retro rumors. Rumors from yesteryear. And then we'll finish it up with another quiz, if you know your history. David versus Max. Max has had a pretty formidable record since we started doing these. We are going back to a different format because of this particular type of questions. So on If You Know Your History, we will be asking David and Max to try to name every player to have played in a certain game from the past. And it was one I have actually seen and was great. So we'll talk about that. That'll be our final segment. Let's talk Gylfi.
Let's.
Yes, we should. We should be talking about him more. And frankly, so should everybody else. He's going through a nice little run, a positive run of form. Highly ranked in chances created. He's got 4 goals on the Who Scored website. I think he's the 5th highest rated player. And he's in their Premier League best 11 for the season. He's looking pretty good. So, David, we'll start with you, because we always start with the person whose name is not Max. And it's nothing personal, but Max gets to talk all the time, just like I do. So, plus, David, I feel like we should give him an hour by himself, because he's been so long. Good luck filling that hour, David. So, David, what do you...
Good luck trying to retain any viewers for an hour watching me.
So, David, what do you think is contributing to Sigurdsson's positive run of form?
I think maybe it was just a long time coming. He'd obviously, he had been creating a lot of chances. And if you remember, there was such a debate going on, wasn't there, in terms of how good these chances were? Because there's so much data out there, you can almost manipulate it how you want it. So, I actually saw 2 very respectable people in terms of the data side of football really having an intense Twitter argument, because one had X amount of data to back up the chances he was creating, but then another was saying, well, the facts are these aren't converting into anything and there's only so much blame you can put on the strike force. But I think somewhere in the middle of those 2 debates is what Sigurdsson is, and I think finally he's starting to reap a bit of the reward for the effort he's been putting in, because he hasn't been bad at all this season. I think he has been a little bit unlucky, and we have created some good chances through Sigurdsson that haven't been converted, but he's starting to really step up when we need someone to step up, isn't he?
Yeah. I know it's interesting, Silva recently, I think they publicized it as Silva having a sly dig at Big Sam, saying that, you know, if you're just lofting and forcing long balls through, it's not really the best thing for Gylfi. That actually does make sense. Max, what do you see as being some of the things that Silva has brought that has helped Sigurdsson kind of see a positive patch here?
The system, the formation, giving him responsibility and purpose playing in that number 10 role rather than messing him about on the left-hand side. Even when Silva's dropped him back deeper, he still looked really, really good and comfortable because, as I said, I think this responsibility that he's being given as the chief kind of creator has been absolutely fantastic. The one argument that always seems to come out of Evertonians is we haven't managed to replace Mikel Arteta since he left, and my comeback to that has always been just give Sigurdsson time. Just give Sigurdsson time and he'll prove you wrong. And yeah, obviously this run of 4 goals in 4 games certainly looked like on track to sorting that out. So obviously he was heavily criticised last season for it not quite working out, but again, who did have a good season last season? No one really.
Just touching on Max's good points there, obviously Silva has basically said to Sigurdsson, I'm going to invest all my trust into you, because we had an abundance of number 10s, didn't we, last season? And he's shipped out Rooney, shipped out Klaassen. He's basically said to Sigurdsson, listen, you're going to be our main creative attacking midfielder. And it's great to see that Sigurdsson's repaying that faith.
You see a lot of people, I think some of the Twitter arguments that you're referring to, David, from some respectable folk with statistics and everything, I think I saw a few of those. And everybody has good points. A lot of them say that having Tosun on the field has been great for Sigurdsson in terms of he scores more goals when Tosun is on the field. I think they said the majority of his goals have been scored with Tosun on the field. I think that's right, which is interesting. However, we also have a pretty small sample size of him playing with Richarlison running through the middle. You know what I mean? We've only had part of one game. So I'm really curious to see what it looks like for the remainder. I think he was mentioning because Tosun is so good at hold-up play, and he does combine well with others. But that's the question. Do you feel like you guys, let Max start this one off. Max, do you think that Sigurdsson will benefit more from Richarlison playing in that central forward role or Tosun?
I think that's a really good point to bring up, because if you rewatch that Leicester game, at times Sigurdsson was pushing beyond and almost playing as that leading striker. It was really fluid. And the move, I think allowing the players to have that freedom of movement to take up positions that, aren't set in stone, allowing midfielders to press beyond them, playing up front positions, Sigurdsson did seem to benefit that. Obviously, he's not, speed isn't as great as asset, and that may have let him down in some respects against Leicester when it comes to closing the ball down. But in terms of his endurance and willingness to cover ground, it was still always there. And I think in regards to Tosun, obviously, I think if you're going to have someone, a playmaker as skilled as Gylfi, players like Tosun who are deadly, and not so much classic number nines, but that's their set position, they're going to benefit from that. However, I was really impressed, and I know you gents know how much I've kind of envied these top sides and how the top sides play their football in terms of how fluid their attacking players are. After a glimpse of what I saw against Leicester, I really would like to see this kind of rotating movement of Richarlison, Bernard, Walcott, Sigurdsson all pushing beyond each other. But yeah, obviously, and that kind of comes full circle back to Silva and the influence that he's had over the tactics that the team are taking up.
David, what are you thinking? If you're Silva, okay, are you rolling with a similar setup in terms of the front four next match? Or are you looking at some of the numbers and thinking, you know what, we should continue giving Tosun a role from the beginning? Or are you thinking it's a matchup thing and we figure out depending on who we're playing?
I think you maybe hit nail on the head at the end there. I think it's dependent on the opposition. See, it's difficult for me to remain unbiased because I really like what Tosun brings to the team, and I'm not necessarily talking about goals. I don't believe Tosun is what you would class as a goal scorer, which is a little bit of a kick in the teeth because you're paying $30 million for a striker. You want someone who scores a lot of goals. But I really like that Tosun's almost a target man with fantastic work ethic who can also finish. But I think he does benefit from having the likes of Richarlison around and Walcott who can chip in with goals and almost assist that kind of tally that you need from your striker. In terms of what Max says, I think that that's a very fair point. We've got like a front four now who are interchangeable and, you know, you can kind of play that formation with. I think what's important to come away from here with is we've got almost two really good options now, haven't we? Because it's not always going to work one way against every team. So now you've got more options. You can go with almost a target man in Tosin, someone who can pick the ball, who can kind of press, who can hold the ball up top. But then you've also got, you know, these lads who can be so interchangeable and fluid. And I think that's going to be so important over the whole campaign that you've got more than one option, which even when we had Lukaku, who was a fantastic goal scorer for us, we never really had another option. Certainly last season, we had very little. So it's exciting.
So I think the dilemma comes from a lot of folks who look at this and think we have to have a set 11. There's this stigma that comes with a lot of the stronger teams. You think these are your 11 strongest players. However, if you're benefiting from even the strongest squads, I mean, I look at a squad like City, who you'll find Sané starting from the bench. That's a quality player, you know, and they can do that, you know.
When was the last time City played a set 11 for more than two games?
You know,
exactly.
Ever. You'd struggle to find a Guardiola City side that have played the same 11 for more than two games, in my opinion.
And there are some really good squads like that. They're not the only ones out there who do that. Mm-hmm. They have that elasticity in their starting 11, you know, so they can actually... I will say there are certain teams that play the same way against everybody. It doesn't matter, and there's your 11. There are good teams like that too, and that seems like that's what people associate with being a good squad, but I just don't think that's the case these days, you know?
No,
go on.
No, I'm just going to say a key factor with that is European football. Mm. You know, you look at this, you're going on about the good sides that field the same 11. They don't necessarily consistently get European football season after season, whereas players with, you know, versatility and quality in numbers, they can field different 11s week in, week out. You know, they can look towards different games on Wednesdays and Tuesdays and, you know, pick and choose when they want to play certain players. And like the point that David made against, you know, about Guardiola and about Manchester City, that's where it comes in, I think.
Mm. And the thing is as well, football, there's so many variables. You've got to be able to adapt. How many times have you watched a game of football where a team is playing one set way and it just isn't working? But like, look at Liverpool, for example, now. I think, obviously, they've had a good season so far, but you look at the way they play, I think they've got a fantastic kind of formation, starting 11. But, you know, how many games have they relied on Sturridge coming on as a different option? And, he nicked a goal at Chelsea, didn't he? And he's, I can't remember, PSG, he started against PSG. And it's just having that different option. I think that's why you've got to have more than one option. I think now we've got that. We've got two different ways we can play. And if one isn't working, we can look to go another way.
Yeah, I think that's huge. And what's odd is I think one of the, you know, when I first started watching Everton play, Moyes was the manager. Then Martinez comes in. And he did talk about that. He talked about having players that give us a different look, a different way of playing, so not everything's the same. However, the irony there is we're talking about a guy who got accused often of not having a plan B when it came to style of play. We may put different people in there, but we're still having the same problems. So that's just kind of, So, I mean, essentially what we're talking about, though, is the long story short here is that right now, the way Silva is wanting to play, we're actually seeing Sigurdsson get to the player we thought we were buying. You know, we're seeing a lot of the same stuff that he was doing with Swansea when he was their best player by far.
Yeah, that's a great point to make. And if you look at, obviously not in terms of quality, but in terms of the system, it's not too far difference either, because I think Guilfoyle was given the same responsibility and the same sort of freedom. Obviously wore the captain's armband for Swansea, and you know, he was wearing the captain's armband when he sunk that absolute screamer in from 30 yards. So my point again about responsibility, you know, you give players something to play for, something to fight for, and you'll get return on that.
Yeah, I think that one of those Twitter arguments that I was seeing, somebody referenced Llorente playing for Swansea and having that big target man up front that Sigurdsson combined well with. And the closest thing we have to that is Tosun. So I'll be really curious to see, because you know we're probably going to continue throwing Richarlison through the middle just because we had such good results. But I want to see what it looks like, the differences in, because I don't think we had long enough to really absorb that in the Leicester match. I want to see the differences in style. I want to see the differences in results and individuals. Mm. Who plays better in what formation? There's a lot to figure out. So
Yeah, that's one thing. I think people just need to remember that we don't always need to be so reactive as a fan base. So if he's in fantastic form now, it probably is going to drop again at some point, but it doesn't need to go back to the, what a waste of money, is it, you know, it doesn't need to go to that. It doesn't always need to be so reactive, you know, just kind of judge him on 10, 15 games as opposed to two quiet games. Just, I think Evertonians just need that perspective every now and again.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay to like a player and think they had a shit game. You know what I mean? It's totally okay. This, you know, good or bad, black or white, I mean, usually truth is somewhere in between. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Spot on.
All right. So, Guilfoyle, we know you're watching. Keep it up. And everybody else around Guilfoyle. Yeah. You're doing that too. So, good stuff. I'm Jerry. David's back. And Max is here. All right? See, I feel like I'm selling Max short because I'm giving David like an action movie tagline. Like, David's back. And Max is here. So now I'm going to work on Max. Next time, next segment, I'm going to give you this kick-ass action entrance.
No,
please don't. Not for Max. None of that for Max.
You thought he was gone, but now he's back and he's kicking ass and taking names. It's Max and his hair bag.
That sounds like the when South Park do a riff of some sort of like some sort of film intro.
That's what I delve into that. I don't even mean to. It's like you know, you accidentally go into Trey Parker. So guys, one of the, I guess, surprising things, the pleasant surprises about this particular season under Silva is Michael Keane has flourished. Now, earlier on in the season, we did kind of a joking segment where we picked certain players that would be the worst on a desert island and, you know, things like that. And we just totally called out Michael Keane. We're like, he's not mentally strong. He's not going to be able to adapt. He would die immediately.
Was I on that episode?
Yeah. Me and you both were, I think. I think Max was too. I think it was all three of us, actually. But and we just roasted him. And to be fair, he has adapted. He has turned it around. David, what do you have to say for yourself? It was me too.
Me under the bus.
it was me too. I just wanted to see the look on your face.
Explain yourself. listen, I take my hat off to Michael Keane. I think, I mean, we can't get carried away. I don't think he's been unbelievable. No. I have to save some sort of face on this, but he's definitely, for me, went up a level. The defence looks so much more assured with him in it. And it was just a real big season, this one, for Keane, and he started it really well. Has he got one or two goals so far this season? Did he get one in the cup and one at Bournemouth?
I know.
I'm thinking of Valencia. He scored just before the start of the season, didn't he? He obviously got the goal there, but he just looks so much more assured. And I actually felt when he picked up that injury and we had Holgate and Zouma in there, we missed them, didn't we? Anyways. yeah, I thought we...
So...
Dexter's got a new coach.
For podcast people, you need to be aware that David's pup is chewing on David's earphone, earbud cord, and it's just the cutest little dog, and you can't even get mad at him. There he is. Oh, yeah. The people watching on TV are loving this, and the people who are listening are like, well, I hope he's cute. You know, I'm assuming he's cute. But yeah, it's a very
cute. We call him satellite ears because his head ears are just ridiculous.
So what kind of dog is he, just for people listening, David?
So he's a Dachshund, but he's got a bit of Chihuahua in him. But luckily, he's not very yappy, and he's a little blue nose as well. So that's the important thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, Michael Keane. Anyway, all jokes aside, overall, I think he's looked really short. I think he's looked stronger. He's looked more short at the back end. It's nice to kind of have someone we've got a bit more faith in, certainly in defence.
Max, you and I were talking the other day about how Keane and Zuma are making a good pairing right now, because Keane looks pretty assured in the air, winning a lot of those 50-50 balls, but he's maybe lacking a little bit in speed. But Zuma picks up on that, and they seem to be kind of balancing out well together. Do you think that maybe one of the reasons Keane looked the way he did is he was paired so often with Ashley Williams?
Well, throwing shade everywhere today, aren't you?
Yeah, Williams.
No, in compliment to Michael Keane, I think his good form came before even Kurt Zouma came in. I think this big turn of form came from the moment where Phil Jagielka was sent off in the first game against Wolves.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of this is the big leagues now, son, you've got to take a lot of responsibility. And I know this is the word that I keep bringing up again, but after last season, it seems like under Marco Silva, all these players look like they have something to fight for. They've got a manager that they want to impress. They've got a manager who puts their arm around them and says, listen, I've got faith in you, repay me. And you can tell that in Michael Keane's performances, because you struggle to recall a game where he's looked as sloppy as he did last season. He's playing off and the back's comfortable. When he needs to get rid of it, he gets rid of it. In the air, you know, he's making his presence felt. I still think he's got a bit of a 50p head and his accuracy isn't the greatest, but as long as he's winning the headers, that's all that matters. In terms of his partnership with Zuma, yeah, definitely, the speed compensation of Zuma does make up for it. Obviously, with Yerry Mina playing the 60 minutes in the behind closed doors, it raises a few questions as to what the future holds for that partnership, which I'm sure we might touch on later. But in regards to Michael Keane, I wasn't the biggest hater of him in the first place. And I always kind of say, I just go back to last season, and I think, you know, with the pressure that was on everyone's shoulders last season, not just with the negativity surrounding the manager, but the negativity that was bred from the fan base from that, it was just a lot for anyone to bear. And I think with this freedom that's come with Marco Silva now, it's benefited everyone, including Michael Keane.
I'm under the impression that Silva is very specific when he's managing in practice. He's very specific. This is your role. This is what you do. This is what you do during this time. And I just don't think that Keane's previous managers this past season were as specific. I'm under the impression that Silva, despite, you know, and he is that arm around the shoulder guy, the players love his ass, okay? Which is great. That's part of it. But it's also like, look, in this situation, this is what you do, you know? And I think a player like Keane, I think he needs that. I don't think he wants to have a lot of free reign. I think he needs consistency. That's what he had at Burnley. It was very much like, this is who you're playing with. You're staying in the same part of the field. Just, you know, and I think he thrives under that kind of a situation. Holgate was a little bit disappointing, especially considering, I think going into the season, we felt like he was one of our strongest center backs, because he had shown that. He had shown that he wasn't making a lot of mistakes. I felt very comfortable. And then he showed some moments during the season on some goals that we conceded where he seemed a bit naive. Like, he wasn't tracking runners who were running behind him. That kind
West
of
Ham.
Yeah. It happened, and it happened another. It was just, I was not expecting to come on here and have to say negative stuff about Holgate. But it happens. He's a young guy.
I know it's a bit off topic, and I don't mean to just drop it on you, but Adam Ola Luckman's just gone for England under 21s or England under 23s.
Boom.
Whatever it is.
Good. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe turning his form.
Yes.
I need it. Yeah, need it.
Yeah, I want him to start getting some minutes and then start being a happy guy and actually thinking, you know what, I actually want to stay there. Because if he's happy getting minutes, it's better for everybody.
Well, so. I think just to kind of tie it to the point with Mason Holgate, what we did think he was one of our better centre-halves, but I think that's atypical of Evertonians because of the faith and the passion that we have towards good young players. Mm. The moment we see a young player with a bit of star quality, I think we automatically assume that they'd be, you know, a polished diamond ready to place in the middle of the starting 11. Me included in that, I definitely would have included Mason Holgate in me starting centre-halves. But I think, obviously, with Zuma coming in on loan as well, and his move to Everton's obviously paid off with him getting called up for the French national squad. Mm. But, you know, we have two Premier League quality standard centre-halves now, which is strange to say because, you know, did you ever think at any point last season that we'd be raving about how good our defence has become? Certainly not. And with Yerry Mina to add to the equation, it's nothing but good things to say.
I think looking at our player rankings when we would rank the players and look at our positions of weakness and constantly seeing centre-back being so low. And then we went out and just... Number one, Keane improves. And number two, we bring in two quality center backs. And one of them, we haven't even really gotten to see. Who knows how good or, admittedly, how bad Jerry Mina will be. But we'll see. Right now, I mean, I know Max and I, you and I talked in the last record about how we, I think our gut would be to kind of keep the same center back pairing regardless of whether Jerry Mina's ready. Mm. Dave, would you agree with that? Maybe... maintain the same situation?
Yeah, because it sounds like we're all making a big song and dance about our defence. I'm still not 100% sold on them yet because, yeah, there's been improvements, but at the end of the day, we've still got one clean sheet, haven't we, all season, which isn't great on paper. I think you lads have hit the nail on the head. I think we need a settled defence now. It's something we haven't had. We haven't had a settle back for. And I am excited about Yerry Mina. I think if you're paying 30 mil for a centre back, chances are he's going to be a starter and he's going to be one of our better players. But I'd leave it as it is. I think Zuma and Keane have done nothing wrong to Warren being dropped out the side. So I'm with you two. I think let's leave it as it is and let's be ready to make the change when it needs to be changed, i.e. if someone goes out of form or if an injury creeps up, which inevitably happens.
Plus, there's the reality that when centre-backs play, they are usually in for the whole 90 minutes. And his behind-closed-doors friendly, he played 60. You know? And so I think he's just going to need to play maybe more of those to kind of get up to game shape. I mean, because... just popping in for your first 90 minutes in a Premier League, I don't care who we're playing, that's not going to be easy for anyone. Mm. So, yeah. However, go ahead.
I was going to say that I was only going to follow on from your point. The Premier League's so competitive this year. I really think it is. When you look at the top four or five now, there's about 2 points between them, and then the rest of us, well, it is tight, so... It's going to be very competitive this year. Continue. Sorry, Jerry.
just to kind of let everybody know, people who are listening on the podcast, anytime you hear David giggling like he's about 4 years old, that means the dog has hopped on the couch and given him a little lick on the beard and then jumped down. Just so you know, that's what you're hearing. All right? I think the really interesting question is going to be, 2 months from now, who are we starting? You know, that's going to be the question. We started to delve into that in our last, when we were talking about the Mina Gomez segment that we just put out recently. But do you try to start accommodating all three center backs, or do you get in a nice rotation? It seems to me, if you want to build that stability, you need to have a pairing for a while. And if you change that out, you need to stick with the next pairing for a while so you can build that trust and communication and all that stuff. But 2 months from now, I'm wondering who we're going to be looking at.
I think Zuma's place is set in stone purely based on the fact that he's alone without the view to buy. I think you want to milk every penny that you can out of your loan signing. That's just, you know, this preset idea that I've got. I would love to see Yerry Mina and Kurt Zouma together at centre-half, as obviously there's just a lot of anticipation surrounding the pair of them. Obviously, as I said there, Zouma being that loan signing who's a French international, and Mina being the Colombian hero from the World Cup, it riles a bit of excitement up inside you. And yet Michael Keane is playing really well, but I know you want consistency, and I know you want stability, but would you not give him a little trial run, a bit of experimentation?
I'm a little bit different to Max on this one, actually. I wouldn't give him any priority just because he's on loan. I think you've got to play whoever's in form. And if anything, I'd actually rather see the lads who are going to be stable at the club playing more than the one who potentially won't be in next season, because the last thing I would want Everton to do is get reliant on a player that we might not necessarily end up signing. I can understand your point in that if you've got a quality player in there that you might only have for a season, make use of him. But I'm still not convinced Zouma would be our best centre-back, to be honest. I think he's been solid so far, but I'm not sure if he's what I consider our best centre-back at this time.
I don't mean to sound harsh when I say this, because I have been extremely impressed with Zouma when I've seen him play, but he's got this air of Mamadou Sakho about him when he's on the ball.
Yeah, it always feels like there's... And it maybe we're wrong, lads, I don't know, because he hasn't really given us much to think this, but it does feel like there's a mistake there sometimes, or there's going to be a... And maybe we're so used to fucking dodgy centre-backs that we're waiting for it to happen. I don't know, but... Yeah, I'm not sure yet. I'm happy enough with him so far, but I'm not writing home about him either.
Yeah, Max, when you were talking about the fact that he was on loan, potentially let's just drain him if we can.
Yeah.
My thought went to where Dave went, which I was thinking, you know, if we've got another young center back who may be doing equally well, do you keep the one who you've already invested in the most so that experience will, because you've already put that money into that one player, you know?
That's a really good shout, I think. You know, it's the investment of experience, really, going forward into the future. It's a really good dilemma to have.
Yeah, oh, God, it's awesome.
it's not as if we're picking the worst out of a bad bunch now.
Right.
We've got a bit of a luxury of choice, and you know, as David said before, they're not the finished article. I, because you know the high standard that I hold us to, I wouldn't even necessarily classify us as necessarily being good, as David said, one clean sheet. But you know, gauging from last season, the improvement has been huge, because we're not parting like the Red Sea anymore. You know, we actually seem decent at the back. And a big thing I do like about Zouma is his ability to pick his head up and just break into the midfield, maybe even crack a shot off. He was the one that got the assist for that Sigurdsson goal against Leicester, and you know, you want things like that to come from your centre-halves.
I think we'll be happy, won't we, as long as we just kind of keep proceeding in the right direction. That's the main thing. You know, we're not asking to be challenging for the title this season, are we? Let's be honest, after last season. But if you can kind of... Which it feels like we've done to an extent. If you can kind of upgrade in every position, which when you look at it across our starting 11 now, it does feel as if, I know Walcott come in January, but if you include Walcott in that group, it feels like we've improved in virtually every position on the pitch over the last 6 to 9 months. And I mean, that's a sign that we are going
going in the right way. We just got to continue doing so.
I think having rational expectations, realistic expectations for improvement, I think that's a tough thing. Because personally, I don't expect us to keep a clean sheet every game. I don't expect that. What I'm hoping is that we suppress the other team enough to allow this potent-ass offense to actually outscore the other team. And if we can hold them to one goal, maybe two, because I expect us to score two goals a game at this point. I do.
Yeah.
It's something that I just expect. And I don't think that's completely unreasonable considering the fact that we are threatening teams every game.
Yeah.
You know, we have chances. We have just not been actually cashing in on those chances.
That's only going to improve too, I think.
Agree. Yeah. Totally agree. So, anyway, Michael Keane benefited from a stable, nurturing locker room. The guy has come in, had his head split open. And I'm not just talking about like getting stitches. I'm talking about his skull was opened up. And what? Like, I thought he was going to be out for so many months after that. He's come back, and he's just slotted right back in. He looked great. A lot of respect to the guy. Michael Keane, no more jokes about your emotional fragility. No, we're going to have to figure something else out. But we'll get you. So, all right, guys. Anything else on Michael Keane? Are we good?
Good.
No, he's got a bye for a little while with me. Keep it up, Keane.
David's got his arms crossed. Harumph. You just keep impressing me.
There's work to be done, yeah, Keane.
hard boss to please. All right, So everybody, that's the end of our Michael Keane segment. He's doing better. We're going to talk some retro rumors. These are from, I'd say definitely in the modern era. First one, this story comes from The Mirror in October 2009. And again, this is a time when you guys were probably watching a lot more, and I barely even knew who Everton was at this point. All right? I was a film student. Yeah. So, October 2009, Everton ready to move for Ricardo Quaresma. It literally said, desperate David Moyes is weighing up an emergency loan move for Inter Milan winger Ricardo Quaresma. Quaresma is out of favor at Inter Milan and available for a loan spell, with Inter Milan hoping to offload him in the summer for around £8 million. He had recently joined Chelsea on loan in January 2009, like earlier in the year, and was apparently a big disappointment. And apparently one of the big sticking points of this was Quaresma's 50,000 a week wages.
It's such a travesty, you know, because in 2009, Everton had such a good team. I think we only appreciate it now, looking back. You know, between 2008 and 2009, Everton, they got to the semi-final of the League Cup.
That the FA Cup final, that was May
2009,
wasn't it?
Yeah, that was 2009. So we had the semi-final League Cup against Chelsea. We got beat by Fiorentina on penalties in the UEFA Cup, which I was convinced, had we won that game, we would have went on to win it. Zenit, who won it, we actually beat in the competition that year. Then we got to the FA Cup final as well. And this was all within the space of, you know, one or two seasons. We finished fifth both times. We had a fantastic team, but we just had no investment to build on that great team. You know, we're talking about low moves then, and it's so painful to hear that because, you know, I still believe Everton should have won silverware over that period. We had a great little team.
That is certainly up there with me favourite Everton teams in my lifetime under David Moyes. Just a serious, very unfortunate. We just didn't have a pot to piss in, really, did we? We just had no investment whatsoever, and we were know, Andy van der Meijden was playing for us then as well, wasn't he? And we had the academy. We were taking like Dan Gosling, Jack Rodwell, and they were all fairly standard when they were coming through as well. They were playing well. Really disappointing that we didn't manage to win something in that period.
I'm not sure how much he charisma would have contributed to the side though.
He ended up finishing out the year at Inter because they could not get rid of him apparently, and then they shipped him off to Besiktas in 2010. So that June basically. So I guess his 50,000 a week was a pretty big sticking point for everybody. So next story, next retro rumor. This one comes from Sky Sports, May 2013. Everton have 8 candidates to replace Moyes as manager. Moyes is succeeding Sir Alex Ferguson at Manchester United this summer, and this has left Chairman Bill Kimwright looking for a new boss. Apparently, this is interesting, the list consisted of Phil Neville, David Weir, Alan Stubbs, Vitor Pereira, who apparently was the favorite at that time, Roberto Martinez, Michael Laudrup, Malky Mackay, Roberto Di Matteo. All right.
Neil Lennon was in with the shout as well, if I remember.
For some reason, it wasn't that his name wasn't on that list, but I think I remember that.
Yeah,
it was. I always remember. It felt like there was just two camps. There was like the European exciting kind of football manager and the old school British kind of hard, like a David Moyes type character. And that was a panic station, that, because apparently the likes of Alan Stubbs and stuff did get interviewed for the job. Mm-hmm. And I actually wanted Roberto Martinez to get the job, so I was chuffed. What a wanker I was.
I wanted Vitor Pereira. I saw when he did the Porto. He just screamed winner to me, and I mean, I know Martinez won the. I just knew how Everton that would be for us to appoint Martinez and scream and shout and stamp our feet in the press conference. He won the FA Cup, but he got relegated, and that I knew that would come back to haunt us, which it inevitably did. But
where's Pierre Max?
That Pereira ended up going to somewhere like Dubai, somewhere like the Middle East. So his career didn't turn out glitz and glam by any means. But I don't know who knows. He could have been.
I remember a lot of Evertonians were really keen on Michael Laudrup. He'd had a good turn at Swansea, but. He's another one that looked like to be a lucky escape, because his career's went down the pan as well, hasn't he? Mm-hmm. I think he got sacked that season or maybe just after with Swansea and never really, really recovered. So,
considering that list, okay, it seems like Pereira is a decent shout there. However, Martinez is, out of all of those, one of the strongest candidates. If you look at all those, it actually, if I'm thinking about all that, he was a pretty solid choice compared to all that other stuff. But Max, you're right. I was fledgling in my Everton support at that point. But when I heard about Martinez, immediately I said, well, he just got relegated. I know he won, but I don't care. He just got relegated. I don't know how I feel about this. And then I heard him speak, and he seemed so intelligent. And then when I saw the way he was bringing the team together, I was like, wow, he's doing a really good job. Okay, I'm behind this guy. I'm good with that. That first season looked good.
That was my favorite season so far in my lifetime as an Evertonian. The the defensive stability of Moyes. And the flair that was kind of sprinkled on top of that by Martinez, and the signings that he brought in, Lukaku, James McCarthy, Gareth Barry, after crew from Wigan. It was a really good season. And as much as we slag him off, I'm gutted that it went down the pan with Martinez, because, if he could have built on us and actually, if it wasn't that kind of just pass around the penalty area, and we actually kind of materialised the plan B. Who knows what could have happened, but here we are. We've got Marco Silva and things are looking up again.
Yeah. Malky Mackay, that guy's situation got kind of untenable.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it was fair to say we were destined to always be doomed with that list. Weren't we? So
that's a fair thing to say. I would agree with that. And you know, the bummer about Martinez is I was the same way, because you hear him speak and his philosophy, I'm just like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's do that. You know, and then he's such a student of the game, and then you actually see, and it's like slamming your head against the wall repeatedly, expecting a different result. It just, that was just...
It literally is Einstein's definition of insanity, isn't it? Doing the same thing over and over and over again. And Martinez, God bless him, he is the eternal optimist. He just is that type of person, and... I've met him and I drilled him with a pretty hard question about Everton, which he didn't like. I'm still gobsmacked as to how.
What did you ask him? What did you do?
You not heard that story?
I don't know if I have or not, but you should tell that story.
I haven't heard it. he came in as a guest speaker for my uni before the World Cup. Obviously, I was rubbing my hands together at this, at the opportunity to drill someone who absolutely broke my heart. You know, he gave the likes of Romelu Lukaku and John Stone the license to leave me club. I was like that. He was given a guest speaker at the Etihad. I rocked up. I made sure it was front seat. And, you know, I've read his autobiography. And, you know, he's a really intelligent man. And he kind of gives, you know, as football as in life, you always need to try your hardest, etc., etc. And then the questions shifted over to the audience, and I was the first one to shoot my hand up, and I went, I can't even remember exactly how I worded it, but it was something along, like, obviously we had such that first season was so good. What went wrong? I used that first home game against Arsenal in that second season, I used as the example when we were 2-0 up and we just kind of collapsed.
I just remember that.
And I gave him
two goals in 5 minutes or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I gave him a good few examples of where, you know, we absolutely ballsed it up. And he kind of looked at me for a brief second. He went, any other questions? But in fairness, he gave me a really good answer. He said his focus with Everton was really to bring silverware in, and although, you know, I was grateful for the answer that he gave us, which was kind of stuff that we already knew anyway, it still did sound like it just a load of chat, as it often was.
Yeah, as it always is. Aye.
Wow. Max, sticking it to Martinez.
I had to. I couldn't not.
Yeah, you know, he's like, when he leaves Belgium practice and everybody else leaves the ground, he's sitting there in his office late at night, and he just stops everything he's doing and just goes, Max!
He's manager of Belgium, mate. It's still a mystery to me how he managed to get that job off the back of leaving us, but...
Yeah.
Ah, well, he's doing fairly well.
Again, he's always seemed like a nice guy, so, you know... I hope he does well and all that. What's funny is he really sounded like completely gutted that it didn't work out with Everton.
Yeah.
Like he seemed like, look, if we'd had the Mashiri money, I'd have been fine. That's the vibe that I got from him when he was talking. But anyway, I don't know about that. Anyway, final retro rumor from Football 365, July 2011. Nikola Zigic.
Played for Birmingham?
Yeah. Nikola Zigic, Goodison bound
from Valencia.
He was 6'8" tall. What?
Scored 50 goals with him on FIFA when I was a bit younger. And he went, as Max said, he went to Birmingham, I think, from Valencia, and then got relegated with them.
So it said that the Blues are on alert after Zigic's agent confirmed the giant striker will leave Birmingham City this summer. Everton are believed to have shown interest in the 30-year-old Serbian in the past. Zigic's agent says, at the moment, the only thing that is sure is that Zigic is going to leave Birmingham this summer. There is still a long time to decide, so we are not in a rush. Nicolas wishes to continue his career in England or Spain. Well, he did. He stayed and finished his career at Birmingham City. A total of 138 appearances and 32 goals. Yeah.
Yeah, we did miss out, did we?
Tell you what, though, we desperately needed a goal scorer in that period. I was sick to death of seeing Tim Cahill and Marouan Fellaini fill in. As...
Yeah, but I'm not sure that he was the one, Max, with his 82 and
152
games.
Of course not, but how... Our striker situation for so many years was so problematic, and it was frustrating.
Yeah, it was.
It wasn't until Jelovic came in, I thought, that really...
Yeah, he gave us 6 months, didn't he? And that was it.
So, yeah. That'd been a great guy to have, you know, beginning of last season. Just have Sigurdsson just lumping balls into the middle. Have an enormous dude just sitting there, Allardyce, not even having to jump.
Allardyce would have loved that.
Yeah, he would have.
Would have brought him back out of retirement.
Allardyce would have been like, put on this wig. You'll be my new Andy Carroll. So yeah, guys, I guess that's our last bit of retro rumors. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. That's right, it's time for another edition of If You Know Your History. We've got Max. Max has just been crushing opponents left and right with his ginormous brain. But now, who's in the cage with him? It's David. David's returned from walking the earth like Kang and Kung Fu. He's back, and you know what? He's ready to challenge. So guys, the way this works, it's a quiz show. If you haven't been actually listening to the show, it's a quiz thing. So what's going to happen is it's sort of like a penalty shootout kind of thing. One person gives an answer, then the next person gives an answer. You go back and forth like that kind of nonsense. The way we're in previous episodes, we've been doing traditional questions, but with this one, it's going to be a little bit different. We are naming the starting 11 in a game, so we'll be going back and forth. Okay, gentlemen. We don't flip a coin because I don't actually have cash. So
any money?
No, I am poor. So essentially, we're flipping a memory card. Here is the heads. Here is the tails.
We've got a tech nerd, everyone.
Great. Now they know. Who's going to call this? Max, you want David to call it?
Yeah, go on.
All right, Dave.
Harry,
what?
What am I calling?
Just heads or tails, man.
But what's heads and what's tails?
No, I showed you. I said this is the heads and this is
sorry.
The tails.
Okay. Let's switch off. Heads.
All right, and we go. Flip. It is tails. What did you call, David?
Heads.
Up.
Hey.
Every time. Every time, Max.
There's some psychic connection there, isn't there?
David, I think he's won every single coin flip by either him calling heads or him calling tails or somebody else calling heads. It's bizarre.
That stinks already. I've got my excuse in.
my memory card is weighted. I designed it to cheat for Max. That's what's happening. Max, do you want to go first or second?
First, please.
Just like usual. Sorry, David. This steamroller is aimed right in your direction, apparently. So good luck. So, gentlemen, so what we have here is I need you to give me every player to have played in the 6-3 win against Bournemouth on February 4th, 2017. Okay? The 6-3 win against Bournemouth, February 4th, 2017. So
eyes on the screen, Max, not looking at your phone.
The super intense game show music. There it is, slowly building.
I'm quite intimidated by Max. I think he's a bit of a rain man when it comes to stuff like this.
Nah, I start chatting shit, it just comes out naturally. Start piling the pressure on. I don't know why. I'm just a bit of a knobhead, aren't I, really? But go on.
Yeah, he actually intimidated Terry one time.
I disagree with that.
All right, so Max, give me your first guess. Who's your first name? Who played a player that played in the 6-3 win against Bournemouth?
Romelu Lukaku.
Romelu Lukaku is correct. There's one. David.
Ross Barkley.
Ross Barkley. There is two.
Morgan Schneiderlin.
Morgan Schneiderlin is correct. There's three.
I'm already out. No. I actually feel like this is I'm going to play it safe and say... it's mad how you overthink it already, isn't it? okay. I can't. Leighton Baines?
Leighton Baines is correct.
Seamus Coleman.
Seamus Coleman is correct.
Did we have John Stones in that first time?
Excuse me?
John Stones?
Hold on. I'm trying to figure out, is that a guess or are you asking just to ask the question? I'm trying to figure out.
I'd like to deny it, but I have to be honest, it was a guess.
Okay. John Stones was not.
Oh, fuck out already. Oh, no. Was this Koeman's season?
I remember the game quite well, to be honest, because it was the game where Barkley celebrated.
Yeah, I know. But for some reason, I had that in. Oh, fuck. I'm
a bit... Well, hold on. So...
You're used to that, bro.
David picks up his drink and just pounds the rest of it.
Yeah. I'm going hard on the bottle. After going out, over two answers.
So, I mean, let's keep guessing, all right? Just because we have a lot of names left. So, Max, who's your next guess?
Right, because of one, I'm going to go out a bit. Was Tim Howard out, suspended or injured? I've got a feeling Joe Robles was in goal for that game.
Is that a guess?
No, it's not. I'm just like,
no, it doesn't really matter because the game's over. But remember, yes, Joe Robles was in goal.
I do remember the game. Yeah.
Yes, Robles did play that one, did start. Okay, and
listen,
and Howard was not even on the bench.
Yeah, yeah, so. Hold on. So I had that game. I've got... Was that... So it wasn't... That was Koeman's first season, that game. Is that right?
Yeah.
Think so?
John Stones, you fucking dickhead. for some reason, I was working off kits, and because I fell in love with that Barkley celebration, and I had it as that... as the kit before Koeman come in, and I've messed it. I'm digging a hole here. Did Jags play in that game?
He did not. He was on the... He was one of the subs who did not play. He was on the bench.
He played in this game. The gay play.
No, he did not. He was on the bench as well.
Right. Was it Gareth Barry and James McCarthy in centre midfield?
Yes.
With Morgan Schneiderlin.
Yes.
On paper, that's like the world's slowest midfield, but...
Or the world's most defensive midfield. It's just. But I guess Gareth Barry did pass forward.
Hey, and I'm guessing right, because will it have been after the Man City game when we beat Man City at home 3-0? So did Luchman play?
Luchman did play.
Yeah.
He did start. Okay.
4-0.
4-0, sorry.
And
Leeds, I have to pull it back somehow. I'm clutching at straws here.
We've all had a drink. All right.
So, two players left who started.
We haven't done the centre half, have we? It'll be the centre half.
I was going to say Funes, maybe.
Who?
Funes Mori.
That's right. He did start.
Big Ashley Williams.
And Big Ash Williams. All right. You guys know any of the subs who came in? Any guesses?
That'd be a tricky one. That's a bit clutching the straws. I can't.
I mean, it doesn't really count, so you can just guess if you want.
No, it wouldn't be like, I was thinking, like, we're not whipping out a Runa Coney at that point, are we? Because he's gone.
No.
Had he gone at that point?
All I know is he was not on the bench for that game.
Yeah, he must have then, yeah.
Kevin Morales, he's like the infamous Everton sub that always.
That's right. Morales came in for Lookman in the 71st minute.
Did Davis get a run out?
Davis came in for McCarthy in the 61st minute.
It's all coming back.
One more that I probably wouldn't have guessed right off the bat.
I'm guessing if we've got a heavy advantage that we're just going to make a really weird defensive substitution. I'm trying to think. What defenders would we have had on the bench? Mason Holgate? Oh, nice.
Oh, great shout, mate. Great shout.
Nice.
Fantastic.
Holgate came in for Gareth Barry in the 80th minute.
Okay. Proud of that one. That was a bit of a stab in the dark.
Yeah. I don't know why I was nodding. It's a podcast recording and I'm nodding as though they can hear the bones in my neck shifting when I do that. Yeah. Sorry, pod people. That's why they were saying great shout. Scorers.
Oh, scorers.
Yeah.
Romelu Lukaku, Ross Barkley.
So Lukaku got four that game, didn't he?
That's right. Yeah. See, David, you're okay. Who cares, John Stones? You just called, you remember that Lukaku had four.
Yeah, you need to warm me up.
That's right.
Ask my girlfriend.
So
she doesn't. So who is the other one we've got?
It's actually a different, a sort of unusual one, somebody who doesn't score that often.
Come on, we'll get it. Come on. Apologies to anyone listening who's just shouting it now.
Hey, did James McCarthy score in that game?
Because, I don't know, did he?
Because he's someone who doesn't usually score, and I'm thinking, because he got his first one against Hull last game of the season. Then he scored against Man United in that really weird kind of carried on run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Stone scored in that game.
Yeah.
James
McCarthy.
Yeah. Lukaku scored in the first minute. God, that's setting the tone.
Yeah.
First minute.
I remember because I was late going through the turnstiles and I missed it. And a steward took the piss out of us all, saying, well, if you would have signed off early.
So, yeah, Lukaku, first minute, 29th minute, 83rd minute, and 84th minute. McCarthy, 23rd minute, and Barkley, when he wasn't costing us 20 million, he scored in the fourth minute of added time.
I love that goal, where he celebrated before putting it in.
Yeah, I literally wrote down celebrated before scored right there for that one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Anyway, I'm gonna try to be positive, because if we turn this into Ross Barkley hour, it's negative. So, Max, your prize for having won this is you get to enlighten us with your musical tastes. So, what awesome tune have you chosen for us to talk about as we close the show?
I've had a bit of a bevy, and it's the first one that springs to my mind. Positively on 4th Street by Bob Dylan.
Positively on 4th Street by Bob Dylan. So, why?
Why? I don't know. I remember, it was just a weird one, because I remember my dad just dropped me a text and said, listen to this song. So and since then I've just thought, it is a bloody excellent song, as often is the case with Bob Dylan. I think he's absolutely fantastic. No, me dad's a big Bob Dylan fan, so I've listened to me fair few amounts of Bob Dylan.
So just for somebody who really can't recall that song, sound, or by name. What is that song about?
I don't know. It's Bob Dylan, isn't it? It's always boy meets girl, or boy doesn't like girl, and boy slags girl off. It's like, yeah. And I don't know. Obviously, you'll have your personal attachments to it, and you know your personal rationale for the reason for liking that song.
Yeah.
And it's just basically a little bit of something of like what we were talking about off camera before we came on. People are just full of bullshit.
Nice.
There you go.
Great note to end on, in my
opinion. That's warming up your day. One little line at a time. Thanks, Max. Now that we are aware of the, you know, how we're all full of bullshit, and you're listening to the dulcet tones of Bob Dylan, we're going to end the show. That's the end of the big show. If you've been listening via podcast, thanks for that. Please subscribe to the Top for Blues podcast. Rate it if you can. And you'll leave us a little review if you like. You can say, the two guys that aren't Jerry sound like they have great beards. Jerry, grow one. Something like that, you know? Or you could say, I wish David's dog was on all the time.
little asshole wants that.
Additionally, check out our YouTube channel, please. If you want to subscribe to the Topic Blues YouTube channel, we're sitting around 12, 20-something subs, so check us out there, too. You can see our faces there, if you're into that kind of thing. Check out David's Twitter if you want to see where David's appearing in terms of podcasts or on video or his written words. Check him out there. Check out Max's analysis. He'll post links to that on his Twitter page, and also where he's showing up for podcast nonsense. He's everywhere too. Check out the both those guys appear on the Toffee Blues website. Check that out, because there's a lot of stuff there. A lot of people who appear on our podcast and contribute to our YouTube channel, they write analysis for that too. Subscribe to the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. No more plugging. Max, as always, good to talk to you, man. Good to see you.
Pleasure.
David, come on more often. Damn it, this was fun. You're wonderful.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Cheers, Jerry.
All right.
I'm Max, of course. Cheers, guys.
All right. Boys. So, for these guys and for me, Jerry, thanks so much, and we're out. So, bye.